Hey, Star Talk All-Stars might be off the air, but we have an all-new way for you to enjoy the show. Head over to youtube.com/StarTalkAllStars for free weekly video episodes of the show. You can still listen to all the audio episodes, but we figured you'd like to watch them with your very own eyes. Subscribe to youtube.com/StarTalkAllStars and hit the bell so you can be notified every time a new video gets published. Thanks to our supporters on Patreon for sponsoring this episode of Star Talk. Join them and listen to every episode with no ads. Go to patreon.com/StarTalkRadio to learn how.
I'm Gary O'Reilly.
And I'm Chuck Nice.
And this is Playing with Science. Today, we test the heat on the street. And for that, you'll be needing sneakers. So slip them on, lace them up, and if your kicks ain't kicking, then it's game over.
Yes. The superstars of sneakerdom are the designers themselves. Guys like Dwayne Edwards, who designed at least one pair of Air Jordans and is a legend in the game. He'll be first up on our show. Following in his footsteps is an Italian prince, Federico Macapani, a.k.a. M. Broidered, a.k.a. Dr. Frankenstein. Mu-ah-ah-ah.
He's not a real prince. Not royalty. Well, at least we'll find out if he is. All right, Federico has worked with both Gucci and Adidas, and we'll be getting into the secret science of the sneaker with the both of them. And then wrapping up the show will be fashionista and sneaker guru Ezra Wine. So sit down, get comfy, and try this bad boy on for size.
Yes, that's right. We're going to have a fashionable show right now. That's right, and as we promised, first up, Dwayne Edwards, who is the founder of the Pencil Design Academy and also a prolific award-winning shoe designer himself with just an incredible backstory. We're so excited to have you here. Dwayne, how are you, my friend?
Thank you, guys. It's amazing to be on the show and getting a chance to speak with you guys.
Yeah.
You are amazingly humble, because if I got one word for our listeners, it's Jordan. And you have a major role to play in that.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the shoes. And we're going to get there. I want to go back and forward in the same conversation to begin with.
Okay.
Why, what is, and what will the Pencil Footwear Design Academy achieve?
Yes. And before you even get to that, why don't you give us a little backstory on how that came about? Because I think it's tied to your backstory inexorably so.
Yeah.
So why don't you give us that and then tell us about the goals and what you hope to achieve in the future with it?
Sure. So Pencil was, it was a school I wish I was able to attend growing up as a kid. And it was, it's an academy that I want to hire from. You know, during my time when I was at Jordan and Nike. And it came from, as a kid growing up in Inglewood, California, my dream was to be a sneaker designer. You know, growing up in the early 80s, for a kid from Inglewood to say something like that was kind of crazy, let alone just even being interested in art in general. Mm-hmm. But I was born with the gift to draw anything I could see. And I remember vividly getting a 1981 Franco Harris football card.
No.
Nice.
Yeah, the Steelers.
That was the first time where they showed the cleats in the football cards, because normally they just cut them off at the knees.
Right.
And I would draw the cards. When I got to the cleats, it was like a lot harder to draw. And so I just got fixated on footwear. So I just started drawing sneakers on 3x5 index cards since I was 12 years old. Until, 2019. So
nice.
I've been doing it ever since. But it was just the thing that kept my attention.
Interesting. So here you are, you're a kid in Englewood. Yeah, you know, basically there's not a path for you, to be honest.
No.
There's not a path for you. So your founding of this school is actually creating the path that was not there for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. My destiny, unfortunately, growing up in Inglewood in the 80s, was I had a higher probability of being in jail or dead. One of those two things.
Mm-hmm.
unfortunately, college wasn't a part of my future.
Right.
I'm the youngest of six kids raised by a single parent, so I never actually got a chance to attend college.
Wow.
But Reebok was on my thank you all, and a brand that I've been taking it out on for the last 30 years.
Yeah, you have. And with that in mind, why don't you I read somewhere about you were in the accounting department somewhere, and then that led you to actual shoe design. How do you make that jump? I mean, I know you couldn't go to I know you couldn't go to college, but what a weird jump to go from accounting to your dream of shoe design. How did that happen?
Well, after graduating high school, I ended up getting a temp job, and my second assignment was to file papers in the accounts payable department for a footwear company by the name of LA Gear. They were in Marina Del Rey, California.
Yeah, I remember.
And so I hated filing papers, but I was at a footwear company, and they had just started changing over management, and they put these small wooden suggestion boxes in every department. And they were hoping that the employees will give them ways to save money and new ways to make the company morale better. And so I took those 3x5 index cards, and every day before I went to file papers, I would just put in my sketch of what I thought LA Gear should design.
Wow.
As shoes. And so for 6 months, I did that every single day before I started my accounting job. And I get I hear an announcement over the intercom, because again, there's no email, right? So when you want somebody, it's an inter-office message that the whole company hears.
Right.
And so I get a message to report to the president's office.
What?
And you're fired, right?
I go into his office, and he had all 180 of my sketches on his desk, and he asked me, you know, are you the person who's been doing this? And he said, you know, what school did you come from? I said, man, I just graduated from Inglewood a few months ago, and he offered me a job right on the spot.
Damn!
Right after my 19th birthday.
My God!
You originated guerrilla marketing.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Put it on your CV.
Absolutely.
Put it on your resume. See, that's the classic guerrilla marketing tactic.
Absolutely.
Which you know Nike did perfectly from time to time.
Yeah.
I mean, so, okay, you're a young man of color in an environment where there's not a lot, if any.
I was the only one, me and a couple janitors.
All right, so.
And did they design too?
No, they didn't.
Like, because you know that's what happens. It's like, wait a minute, look at this. This black guy has natural design talent. Maybe, hey, get over here, put that mop down. Draw me a sneaker.
So, okay, as a teenager, you know you've got something, but what did you think you had that was special?
Honestly. You know, I just had a passion for designing sneakers, because I was what you would call a sneakerhead before there was a term sneakerhead.
Right.
So all through high school, my biggest fear, still to this day, my biggest fear is to walk into a room and have the same shoes somebody else has on.
Sweet.
So I would back in the 80s, when they didn't have multiple color options.
Right.
I would go and buy white and go to the shoe repair shop and buy color dyes. Get some duct tape and an X-Acto blade and dye all of my shoes different colors just so I can show up to school with something that no one else had.
Wow.
So for me, it was just in a part of who I was. It was my identity and my personality just to have something different on my feet.
And if you did that now, you could actually sell those sneakers for thousands of dollars.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
Like, you did it back then just to be different. Sure. But if you yourself right now went and deconstructed a shoe and dyed it different colors and put it back together, that shoe would sell for thousands of dollars. That is so dope.
Good point.
By the way, Dwayne, I know we're fast friends, but could you please do that in a size 12 for me?
Right. Well, you know what? We wear the same size, so, you know, I might be able to slide you a few pairs of things.
Yo, man, it took you 10 minutes.
Hey, let me tell you.
It took you 10 minutes to beg a pair of sneakers.
I don't care. Listen,
10.
Let me tell you something. Shame is not one of my strong suits.
Shameless.
Right. Shameless.
That's your middle name right now.
Yes, there you go.
So, okay, Dwayne, if you're playing with dyes and you're designing, and you know the title of this show is Playing with Science.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you didn't go to college, so you don't have a degree in biology, chemistry, physics, or anything else. Like, I am the same. But you started, all of a sudden, you worked out what you could dye. You worked out how. Yeah. You working out the chemistry of that. You working out how to fix and fast colors. You're working out all sorts of things. So from where you start in your whatever cottage garage industry you started from, where from there, where has that journey taken you in terms of the appliance of science to sneakers? Because there's some serious stuff gone down in between and now.
Yeah. I think fundamentally, you know, I grew up as a problem solver.
Right.
You know, even the dyeing of the sneakers was a challenge because I had to find the right dye, mm-hmm. and then I had to scuff up the leather to soak up the dye, and then I had to find the right tape that would stick and wouldn't come off because of the dye, and then try to understand how long it took for it to dry. So just fundamentally, like just through problem solving, you know, science kind of happens, right?
Right.
And it's no different even from a footwear design perspective. I absolutely hated geometry in school, but there's so much geometry in designing shoes, it's ridiculous. Like, you can't design shoes without it, actually. But I didn't know that's what it was. I was just doing it to finish the thought and the idea. It was when I start going backwards and reverse engineering the process, then I started to understand the science behind the creation of sneakers.
Okay, so you're responsible for at least one Air Jordan, am I correct?
Two of them. Then I worked on three other ones. Yeah.
All right, so you, not just geometry, you're going to be really up on anatomy. Tendons, muscles, the way, the movement, the dynamics, the biomechanics, everything. And then if you're designing for a particular athlete.
Oh, yeah, it changes completely. Absolutely. So when I would design for specific guys, if it was for baseball, if it was for boxing, it was for basketball, for football, I would watch the sport completely different because I'm actually only watching from the kneecap down.
Wow.
It wasn't until I retired I could enjoy a full game of basketball or baseball, look at the whole thing, because I was so fixated on the actual movement that the feet were making. And physically, the size of these guys, it's almost like you can't really put something over their feet because it doesn't really stick to the foot based on the movement that they actually make.
Yeah, right.
And so just understanding kind of the physiology behind the sheer force that someone who's, you know, take Carmelo Anthony, 6'8", 230 pounds, but when he's moving, that triples. And then he's not only moving in a forward pace, at any moment he's going left or right the drop of a dime. So that's additional force that is put upon this structure that you've built to keep him safe, quote unquote, right? And so because of that, you would have to understand what materials can withstand certain force. Mm-hmm. You would have to understand the different rubber compounds that could withstand the abrasion on a wood floor with a certain type of polish on it. But there's so much science and math involved in the process. You just actually, you don't look at it through natural learning as if you were in school. Like if you told me to take a science class and a math class and a physiology class in school, traditional school, I would tap out like, I'm good. I don't want to do it. But if you put a sneaker in front of me and said, hey, you know what? This sneaker has all of these things in it. And you learn through that process, you would learn all day long. Like you would probably pay to be in that class versus, you know, you paying, you know, learn it and getting paid for it.
That is,
but yes, a part of that is understanding the entire physiology of the athlete and what materials, compounds work with the product, but also the surfaces that they play on as well, also has just as much of an impact on how you design and create products.
You talking there makes me recall just the recent history of March Madness and Zion Williamson, where we'll call it a wardrobe malfunction, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Major.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was the first sneaker blowout.
as a designer, A, that hurts you, I'm sure. But what kind of forces are going through him to rip that shoe apart?
First of all, I've seen shoes blow out before. Mm-hmm. Now, technically, when they blow out, what's really happening is shoes are put together, the upper and the bottom are put together by glue.
Glue, right.
if that glue gets to a certain temperature, it starts to loosen up.
Right.
And that's how it separates the top and the bottom. It's a really easy trick. You can stick a shoe in the microwave and you can take the bottom
off.
You'll
take the boot off, right?
About 2 minutes in the microwave. So usually that's how shoes blow out. That's normally how it blows out, is that the sheer heat and the friction from the bottom of their feet is loosening up the glue, is generating heat, loosening up the glue, and then the bottom usually separates from the upper. This one was completely different.
Right.
It tore through a midsole.
He went, that's right.
Like if you tried to do that with a saw, it would take you some time.
Right.
To really cut through this thing the way he tore through it. I'm still shocked. The Nike folks are still shocked. I know the guy who designed it. We had it. I know he was sick watching it. Mm-hmm. Because that is your worst fear as a designer, of watching a shoe blow out.
Right.
On probably the biggest stage.
And the biggest,
at the moment.
Right. On a national stage. However, just to help you guys out, I wish you had me as your PR person, because immediately I would have released a press release that says Zion's feet are made of razors. If you want to know what happened, the brother has razor feet. It's a very rare condition. And
ultimately what happened, Zion is about 285 pounds.
Right.
He put over 1,000 pounds of pressure at that split second, and that's what helped tore through that whole shoe.
Wow.
Now, what's crazy is no one knows where the shoes are.
The actual shoes that had the blowout?
No one knows. Nike doesn't have them. Duke doesn't have them. No one knows where the actual shoes went.
I know who has them.
And they're already valued well over $300,000.
I'm sure, and I'm sure who has them, Adidas. Adidas has them. That's who's got them.
I'm getting...
Because that's who sabotaged
them. I'm getting Scully and Mulder on this. I'm going to go X-Files on this
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
Whoa. So, okay.
Wait a minute. More time. $300,000 is what those shoes are worth right now?
They're going for right now over $300,000.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
If they surface.
Yeah. Someone's waiting for it to go to $500,000. Trust me. There's an agent involved, and they're waiting to go to $500,000 before they surface.
Somebody has them. Some equipment manager, some ball boy.
Yeah.
Some powerful.
Somebody got them.
Somebody has them.
I can't let you go from this show without saying, how do you redesign that shoe for that athlete?
Oh, my God.
I know. The easy questions first, huh?
Yeah, there is a way. So, you know, it's hard to talk through, but there is a way visually to create a more structurally sound product in this precise area where he blew out his shoes.
Okay,
if you're familiar with sneakers have a top and a bottom, right?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
There's a specific Nike technology called Foamposite that allows the side of the midsole to wrap up higher up on the upper.
Yep.
That would have resolved that issue. That would have never happened if that was in there.
So it's a wrap round of the sole over the upper, but more so.
Right.
So yeah, it wraps up sides more.
Yeah.
So it actually becomes like a reinforcement of that area right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Super cool. Hey,
it almost becomes like it's like this. It's a bit of a cradle.
Right.
Like it cradles the foot.
Before we thank Dwayne,
how
many of your students are now placed in design houses for brands and doing what you taught them to do?
Wait, let me take a guess. I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to go 90% placement.
So we have over 400, close to 500 kids working professionally in the last 9 years. So they're all of the top brands.
Bam.
And if it wasn't working, all the brands wouldn't be working with us.
That's
the way I see it.
There you go.
Of our results.
Yeah. And by the way, what you just described is applied learning in an immersive environment. And it is one of the most effective ways of bringing about learning for anyone who is truly interested in something. It is also part of, in Europe, what they have are apprenticeships.
Yeah.
And so your apprenticeship...
On the job training.
Your apprenticeship allows you to learn exactly what it is you're going to be doing in the environment in which you will be working, and it is highly effective. So, you know, congratulations to you to bringing something that works so well to the shores of America. And I can only hope that there are other institutions such as yourself that will see this and kind of adopt it, because it is highly effective. And when you want to talk about creating an economy where people are able to flourish, that is one of the ways that you can do it. So kudos to you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for the Pensole Academy. It is a fabulous project.
Yeah. And can I get in? Can I send you a sketch?
No.
Can I send you a sketch,
no.
Dwayne?
It's going straight in the trash.
Absolutely.
Yeah, slam dunk it.
Hey, Dwayne, thanks
Dwayne
so
Edwards,
much, man.
Thank you, sir.
Great talking to you.
All right, Chuck.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. We are going to take a break.
All right, let's take a break.
Let's do that break. When we come back, Federico Macapane, yes,
Macapane
at Embroidered will be with us live in the studio. Do not go away.
One of our most popular segments on Star Talk is Cosmic Queries. You ask the questions, and Neil and our science experts answer them. How do you submit a query? Follow Star Talk on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and look out for calls for queries based around a specific topic. We post a call for questions every time we need them for a new episode. You can also submit a question at any time at startalkradio.net/queries. If you want a better chance of getting your question asked, you can support Star Talk on Patreon. We prioritize questions from our patrons. Thanks for being the best and most curious fans in the universe.
Welcome back to Playing with Science. What a fabulous conversation with Dwayne Edwards.
Yeah.
And we're about to have another fabulous conversation. And he's here with us in the studio.
In studio.
Federico Macapane, you may know him better as Embroidered. He has been described as a Dr. Frankenstein of sneaker design. Now, I don't know if he's happy with that, but we're going to find out. Federico, welcome to Playing with Science.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely,
well,
man.
It comes from our side. So, your inspiration comes from where?
Well, from a lot of different things in life, but I guess I look a lot at nature as the highest form of inspiration for me, because, you know, everything in nature is the way it is because of a series of evolution that led us to this moment of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, looking at nature as really like the best thing, the most functional, animals and plants, where you can only survive only if you are the apex of your category. And so there is a lot of beautiful things from colors, forms, shapes. It's really amazing.
I think it's fabulous you see it like that, because we've only ever thought of sneaker footwear as function. I run, I jump, I throw, or whatever, I kick.
Right.
And what color do you want? And it doesn't seem to go beyond that, but you've elevated that whole thing by bringing a totally fresh concept to it. Like I said, the Dr. Frankenstein thing.
The way I work is we have to solve problems, and that starts as the beginning, you know?
Look so, at that.
There is a lot of science involved in sneaker design.
Absolutely.
And you're a big friend of Dwayne Edwards. It's funny.
We just had him on, and he said the exact same thing you just said.
Yeah, which it's like you had a conference.
It's like like you guys were talking before this. So I'm interested. I'm looking at I look at your Instagram, and your Instagram is pretty dope, man. You have so much cool stuff on there, like a design, and they're all your designs, right?
Or
are these just the things that you like? Is that?
Those are all my shoes.
Okay, those are all your shoes. Okay, yes. That's what I thought.
I love shoes. I collect shoes.
Right.
I wear shoes.
Yeah.
That's what really, like, my Instagram is the representation of what goes through my head.
Right. So here's what I want to ask you, because as I look at all these different shapes and constructions and the composites that are used, talk about form following function. How does it work? Are you working with engineers at the company and then they tell you like, okay, here's what this shoe is going to do? I mean, in all design, it always comes down to you have a vision, but then you're limited by the real world application of whatever it is that you're designing. So how does that work when it comes to your shoe design?
Well, you know, we have a lot of different teams where we have sports science, we have marketing, we have development, we have design. So all these teams work together to create a product. It's not definitely one man job. Mm. You know, nothing would happen if it was just for designers or just for developers. It's truly the collaboration between all these things.
Wow.
And, you know, actually, you know, when you work and create shoes, especially for athletes, you start from the insides, how they play, why they do certain movements, looking at their biomechanical movements and understanding the force that they put into the shoes, the directions. So there is a lot of like data involved in design, especially nowadays. We have a lot of way to capturing data. And there's never been like that, you know, up until now. So the way I approach it is I take this data as like my ingredients and I need to use them in order to, you know, bake the cake.
Right. Gotcha. So all this data becomes your little cake batter.
Kind of, yeah.
Right. And so so what is the last part? Is it aesthetics? Or do you ever start with like, man, this is going to be the coolest looking shoe ever? And then try to reverse?
Well, you know, before I was working in this industry, I was approaching things in, I like them. I like the way they look. But when you start working at a professional level, you start to understand that the first thing that it's matter the most is the function. They need to perform and they need to make the athlete better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're making a shoe that doesn't make the athlete better compared to the one before, it didn't work out right.
Right. So it's truly form following function.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. You know, but again, I love also like beautiful products. And for me, it really needs to be a balance between making them work perfectly, but also making them look beautiful.
Right.
Because at the end, you know, like, especially kids now with social media, we are bombarded by visual information constantly.
Right.
And when they're scrolling on the explore page, you have like 3 seconds to get their attention, to click the photo, open it up, and they are understanding if they want to try it on or not in those 3 seconds.
Right.
And that it's, you know, based on look, let's say, because that really is what takes gets your attention. If then, you know, that look is amazing, then you want to try them on. And if you get them for the feel, you won.
Gotcha.
So go back to say, you know, there's a lot of science involved in sneaker design and construction. What science are you embracing right now and what science could we possibly see in the future?
Technology evolves every day. Like 3 years ago, what we do today wouldn't be possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there is so much about computational design and that it's really influencing the way we design sneakers. Before there were a lot of like sketching, but now it's kind of, we have this data, we have this machine that can generate the design
mm-hmm.
based on the data that we implement. So it's all based on algorithm that is truly like super mathematical, you know? And I believe the future for designers will be kind of like selecting which design the machine provides you, because we as human, we have feelings the machine don't have, you know?
Right.
Machine can do everything perfect.
Are we talking AI designed footwear?
Kind of, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not true AI, but in a way it is, because the algorithm is kind of making the selection in terms of what will be the output.
Yeah.
But
then machine, I love what machine learning algorithms.
Well, it's
yeah.
But what I love what you're saying though is, and maybe one day this will not be the case. You know, there, maybe one day machines won't have emotions, but what they'll be able to do is accurately depict what emotions are elicited by looking at something.
Yeah.
But what I like about what you said right here is that what you have to do now is have the eye of design
mm-hmm.
in order to look at that and say, no, this is truly aesthetically something that we would want to make, as opposed to this, which actually lives up to the functionality.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's an ugly piece of crap. So take that, computer. No, I'm joking. right?
No, yeah, for sure. You know, like, it's truly the collaboration between men and machines.
Right.
Without a collaboration, there would be just humans and machines doing their own things. But it's when the two worlds collide, that's where really the magic happens.
Nice.
So let's focus on the sort of predator-hardened
Yes.
Hybrid that you came out with. The Predator is a soccer boot, a football boot, right. Cleat, whichever cleat. Way you perform.
It's a cleat,
and
yeah.
The Harden is a basketball shoe. Now, this is the Frankenstein part of design for you. Now, I know the soccer shoe because it's a Predator. Mm-hmm. And that Predator is built with rubberized paneling that enables more traction on the ball.
When you kick it.
Yeah, so I'm bending it like Beckham.
The swerve.
Yes,
right.
The swerve. And then the
puts more spin on the ball to create a more dramatic Magnus effect.
There you go. There's right. Our science. Mm-hmm. So, what on earth drew you to produce something like that,
dude? It's and by the way,
it's cool.
If you take a second, just look up Harden Predator. It is now, and I'm going to tell you this, Federico, and I'm not blowing smoke. Okay, I'm not a sneakerhead. Okay, as a matter of fact, you see what I'm wearing? I'm wearing Chucks, because that's my name, and that's about as deep in the game as I'm going to get. These things are so cool looking that when I saw them, I was like, oh my, like I actually had that sneakerhead reaction, like, oh my God.
They look kind of crazy. You know, it all started that I love the Predator franchise. I love the colors, black, red, and white. You know, they are iconic for Adidas football.
Yes.
The thing is, I couldn't wear cleats on the street.
So let me ask you about this design, though, because, I mean, we know that you took it from the sun. Is there any racing inspired? Because it looks like it's moving when it's sitting still. Oh, wait, do you have it?
Yeah.
Oh, he's going into his bag right now. He's going to take the shoe out. That's pretty awesome.
And also, this is a custom, so this shoe doesn't really exist.
The shoe you're about to show us doesn't really exist?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't exist. It's not an official shoe.
Exclusive!
You're messing with Chuck's mind.
We got an exclusive!
Don't show him something that doesn't exist. You'll blow his head away.
Oh my God, look at this thing.
I know.
This thing is so cool, man. And I'm not a person who gets excited about sneakers. But when you look at that. It's beautiful. It looks like sports and sex at the same time. You are Italian. Yo, man, this is amazing.
Give it back. Otherwise, you'll take it to dinner.
Boy, and you know what? There's a certain asymmetry that actually that adds to not only aesthetic, but also makes it look like it's in motion. I mean, you're really fancy.
I mean, this is
amazing.
Iconic as a design, as a Predator design, as the boot. I mean, I grew up with Adidas. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've worn them. I've been sponsored by them, all sorts of things. The knot in the laces is a soccer player's guaranteed excuse.
Really?
Yeah, because it must have hit the knot.
Oh, hit the knot.
Right? So that's why it's in the stand.
Wow.
So now, function and form. This is here. The Velcro is there to keep it there. This now gives a more uniform surface over the instep of the foot.
Right.
And therefore, you've got a plain surface.
Now, it's not the knot.
There you go. Now,
it's not the knot.
You've just taken away a soccer player's excuse.
So cool, man.
Myth busting.
This is so cool.
And this shoe is from 2000.
Yeah.
I took actually a vintage pair that I actually found on eBay.
What I'm laughing about is 2000 is now vintage.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
How old am I?
When you get two words that have nothing to do with each other collide, you create really something that is super interesting that before you wouldn't have even thought.
Right.
So, you know, like... 3 or 4 years ago, I started putting my ideas out on Instagram because I was putting them out with an hashtag that was hashtag what if. Because I was a fan back then of just sneakers and kind of I wanted to see what wasn't available.
Gotcha.
And because I knew how to use Photoshop and Illustrator, I said, okay, I'm just going to do it and put my ideas out. And eventually these ideas reached blogs, website, designers, and then eventually led me to where I am today.
Favorite sneakers right now?
Right now?
Yeah. Right here, right now.
There has to be Adidas, right?
Of course.
Yes.
Thank you.
Favorite new sneaker or favorite sneaker ever?
Ever. Let me go teenage on this. Ever.
Right now, it has to be the Adidas Carbon 4D. Which is the one that has been designed with the, you know, 3D printed technology that has been made in partnership with Carbon, which is a company based in California.
All right.
And it's a tech company, actually. And, you know, the beauty of this is that the collaboration that comes from two worlds that completely have nothing to do with each other. And, you know, when the shoe came out, it really inspired me a lot because you know, one day potentially we can have shoes that are custom made for everybody. You walk into a store, mm-hmm. you scan your feet, and
right.
you know,
and then it'll print out for you right there on the spot.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that'd be it. So the Carbon 4D is just a tremendous looking shoe. And so, what part of this is printed, or is the entire shoe printed?
In this case, the sole is printed.
It's the sole that's printed.
The
okay.
midsole.
The midsole. Okay, I got you. That makes sense. All right, cool. Go ahead.
My favorite shoe?
Historic. Yeah.
Historic, I would say, really, the Predator Accelerator, like which is the model before the one I show you.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful for me. And, you know, I don't know. Like, it has everything.
You see, a shoe's got to touch the sole. I know you're Italian, and that's it's a different. But for me, I go back to the original, the 70s.
Uh-huh.
It's the royal blue white stripes Adidas Gazelle.
Yeah,
with
classic.
But with the sole is very different because it's got that sort of hexagonal pattern, but it's very spongy. This is before all of the energy capsules and energy returns and all the rest of it.
Die-cut foam back then. Right.
Yeah.
And for me, it would be the Christian Louboutin Classic Peak Toe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, in a 6-inch heel. Uh-huh.
Size 12.
No. You just ruined it. You just... No. No.
Look, Federico, what a pleasure.
Thank you. What a pleasure to have you, man.
Thank you so much.
We must come and visit you at the lab over in Brooklyn and record some footage. That'd be cool. In the studio with us, Federico Macapani at Embroidered.
That's right.
AKA Dr. Frankenstein.
Grazie, amico.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Right, we're going to take that break. When we come back, fashionista, sneaker guru, and a great interview. Ezra Wine will be with us. That break now. Ezra on the other side. So, Chuck. Fashion designer and archivist Ezra Wine. Now,
yes. We
have to know what it really means on the street. So there's only one person to go to.
Yeah.
This is our guy. Ezra Wine, welcome to Playing with Science, sir.
What's up? Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, without a doubt, man. So you're in the fashion world originally from taking the stuff that you loved.
Yes.
And kind of remixing.
Yeah.
Like you're like the Puffy of fashion before there was any remixing. You were remixing fashion.
Yes, I definitely feel that way. Glad you said it that way. I Dapper Dan has always been like a big influence of mine growing up. Just seeing what he was creating, kind of taking luxury labels, whether he was cutting and sewing old fabric and remaking these Louis Vuitton Gucci pieces, and he was so influential at the time. Yeah, so I feel like that was always a big big influence on me.
If you can just give us a brief history lesson of why we're at the place we are right now with regard to sneakers and what has been the journey.
Yeah, it's a very complicated journey, a journey that I love to think about and talk to my friends about. I think it's about art. I think it's about supply and demand. I think it's about cultures forming. I think it's about, and again, back to the art side of it, I think it's about these products that were created that certain individuals like Michael Jordan wore and kind of popularized. And then it's about how people wanted this art and people sought after these pieces. There was a status symbol. There was... risk involved with, like, you know, people getting robbed for their sneakers and all of these things, while the majority of the country might have thought of this as like, oh, don't buy those for your kids, like that's only gonna be trouble. There's always this percentage of people in America that like think this is controversial, this is exciting,
I gotta have it,
this is like in the news, this is in the crime part of this part of the newspaper, and it's in the fashion part of the paper, and it's in the sports section.
So is it true?
That's funny.
Is it true? you guys can bear this out. I read this on the other side of the Atlantic years and years ago,
mm-hmm.
that Nike would judge the success of their new release on the number of times a sports store would get a smash and grab.
I could see that being the case. Wow. Definitely in the 80s.
Yeah.
If it, you know, that sometimes that's how popularity is
that was
the determined.
Before we've had all of this data acquisition, that was the way to understand whether this shoe was going to work or whether or not they got to move on and design something else.
And yeah, I mean, I think the other big part of the story is, and not to jump ahead to like the whole Jordan 1 story, but you know, it's a shoe at a time when the league is a diverse league in 1984 when Jordan enters it, you know, black players, white players, but dress code wise, everybody's wearing white sneakers.
Yeah.
And it's, when Nike made this black and red sneaker, Peter Moore, who I believe is the original designer for the Jordan 1, when they created this, this was like a shock to the world. It's like black and red. This is the devil's colors. This is like gang. Right. This is a gang look. And these were all the things that were said. And then the fines came in, and you know, the NBA said, well, this goes against our dress code policy.
But you were involved in this story. Once the fines come in, were you not? You then brought your own take to this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, perfectly honest, my own experiences a number of years later, you know, I was not making clothes in 1984. I will admit that. But so for me, it was more of a 10 years later when all these books start coming out on Jordan and books on sneakers and kind of telling the story. And one of the most exciting stories that I was learning about at the time was the story that this went against the league policy, and the NBA said, you know, it's $300 a game. Like, you can't wear these and we're fining you. And then it goes up to, over the course of the season, it turns into a $5,000 fine per game.
So every time Michael Jordan steps onto the court,
yes,
the NBA is saying, we're going to censor you $5,000 because we told you can't wear those sneakers. Now, they're damn sure not going to tell him he can't play because he's the most exciting player in the league.
Right.
So they can't say that. Plus the NBA, like the commissioner, doesn't have the power to actually sit a player. Only a coach and a GM can do that.
Right.
So they're like, all right, what can we do? We got to pay. You got to pay $5,000.
So is Michael putting his hand in his pocket and pulling out $5,000 every game, or did someone intervene?
The story is that Nike paid all the fines, that this was all marketing hype. And Nike.
How many shoes were they selling? How many games in a season? 180?
No, 82 games in an NBA season.
All right, that's baseball.
Baseball, yeah.
80 games, right? At 5,000 to go.
8 times 5, it's 40. That's not bad. Not if you're Nike.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, that's kind of smart.
But this is also 1984. It's like Michael Jordan's a rookie. He's not guaranteed to be, you know, this world icon.
It's a big gamble.
And in the movie Just for Kicks, the documentary film Just for Kicks that I love to watch, they also talk about this a lot, where Nike, this was like a roll of the dice for Nike, because they had some money, they signed Jordan, but they weren't this, like, according to the film at least, they're saying in 1984, 1985, that Nike is not this like powerhouse. And this was kind of like a roll of the dice, where it's like, if it works, they become, you know, cultural icons.
The thing about the big sports brands, because I've done some of this myself in the UK for Adidas and a little bit with Nike, talent identification of the young players.
Mm-hmm.
And we will sit down and go through a list of talent. Mm-hmm. And we will then be asked, when I was at Adidas, I was asked, will this player not just become a top domestic player, will he go on to be a top-rank international player?
Right.
And we had to call it. And I'm looking at people saying, he's 14. Because of my background, that's function.
Yeah.
This shoe, this boot, whatever it is I've got on my feet has to have a functionality. If it doesn't give me that, it's out the window. And I don't care which floor I'm on, they're going out the window. So then you talk about it being a work of art. And I'm looking at it and thinking, you know what? There is a part of that. You think, oh man, I look good in these.
That's a function.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a function to a lot of people.
But that's on a mental level. This is taking the design of a shoe off of the physicality and popping it straight into your head.
Yeah. The function is to not have somebody walk up to you and go, what are those?
Right.
That's the function.
Yeah.
So how do these shoes become so valuable? So you said on the resale market, is that because Are there sneaker companies aware that these shoes now are sought after and they stop production? Because I would think, like, if they keep making them, they can't continue to be valuable. I just wait for them to make some more. I'll go get them. The only way they can be valuable is if there's scarcity.
Yes.
So how do they create that scarcity?
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, it's definitely difficult to figure out what is going on in the Nike strategy world, but I think that they are just chasing lots of money and from different, like, groups of people. And I think the general idea is, I mean, the weird thing is right now, there's like a sneaker probably that came out just today, if not like more than one, just from Nike, where, like, growing up in the 80s, it was like, oh, the Jordans are coming out once a year. You know, like, everybody's waiting for that one, you know, February day when, like, there's actually like a new shoe on the shelf. Now it's like sneaker releases every day. But I think there's also a case of, and I'm glad you mentioned scarcity, it's like there's definitely a case of, this is a cool design, it's a special colorway, let's put a cool name behind it, and we're only making 200 pairs, even though we know that 40,000 people want these, and this becomes like...
I'm sorry.
Something super special.
Dude, so you said, I bet you there's a Nike sneaker that was released today, right? So I went to the site, and I just put in, Nike sneaker released today, all right? Here it is. Jordan 1 Retro High Travis Scott. $880. Oh my God.
Is that per shoe or per pair?
Like, it makes a difference to me. Per shoe or per pair. So that's what they put out today. So this is basically a re-release because I've seen the sneaker before. This is a classic Jordan back in the day look.
Right.
But I guess they're re-releasing this on a limited basis so that the people will pay $880. For these sneakers, this is genius.
No, daylight robbery.
Well, I think
there goes my Nike endorsement.
I mean, I think the other thing that's happening here is that it's like Nike will. They're creating this want where, like, everybody wants that shoe. It's this, you know,
yeah.
Travis Scott's behind it, and there's a limited number of them, and there's this crazy, you know, if you can get them at retail for $200 or $300 and you know that you can sell them for $800. This is a job for people, yeah. You know, to be able to make $500 a day, like, right. Reselling something. But I think what Nike is also doing right now is if you go to any Foot Locker, Foot Action, Nike store nearby, there's also tons of other Jordans that are not $800, that are $100, $200, that did not sell out day one. And so there's a sort of wave of like, oh, if you want something that, like, looks like it, it's always available. Like, come on in. We have your Jordan 1. We have your Jordan 3s. But, like, oh, you want this brown suede mocha one from Travis Scott where we made it a very fancy box. Those you have to, like, really work for or sleep in front of our store or spend $800. So, they seem to be chasing money from multiple lanes.
Let me ask you this question because you may know the answer. The shoes Michael Jordan would have worn on court,
right.
Are they the ones? No, I'm not dropping $800 on a pair of sneakers.
I'm not paying $800 right? For Michael Jordan's
actual
sneakers.
Would I be opening
sneakers?
A Nike box and pulling out exactly the same shoe as Michael Jordan would have been wearing? Or am I getting something that looks like but isn't the same as?
I'm going to say it is the exact same product. That is what Nike says. Right. And now, with that said, the only asterisk to the story is that there are these items called PE, player exclusives. And that's, if you ever go to Flight Club or any of these resale stores, you will see, like, you know, Ray Allen, when he played for the Celtics, was, like, sort of gifted from Nike some, like, you know, Jordan doesn't usually make, like, a green Jordan. So, like, they would make, like, him a green Celtic sneaker, and then, like, somehow maybe he gives them to a friend or a charity, like, something happens, they wind up at Flight Club, and now those are like the $2,000 sneaker. And I hear that those can be a little different. Sometimes they'll, like, they'll like handwrite numbers inside, right. Like,
so
I've been told that it's the same.
They make cappuccino. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like
that's the Clooney.
So we're about out of time, but you have, what is the shirt that you have here?
So this is a t-shirt that I designed in Photoshop many years ago. Basically, after loving the Air Jordan sneaker for many years, definitely wanted to pay homage to Jordan and kind of tell the story that we were talking about earlier. As the text of the t-shirt reads, it's a Air Jordan number one, black and red print, and then the text. And this is from like a poster of like a page of a book, and it basically says $5,000 fine per game. And this is all related to the story that we were telling earlier, which is that in 84, when Jordan came into the league, he was getting fined. So basically the card that we wrote up
has a little story on
it. Has a little story. So I'll read it. In 1984, the National Basketball Association banned the Nike Air Jordan sneaker and fined rookie star Michael Jordan for wearing his signature sneakers. The league claimed the shoes went against dress code policy, stating the shoes did not have enough white in their design.
Ooh.
At the beginning of the season, the fine was $300. By the end of the season, it was $5,000 fine per game. Nike paid every fine. This is all in the book, in one of those Air Jordan books talking about the history of the shoe. And the story's been going on and on. You can check it out in Bobito's Where'd You Get Those book. And I mean, now there's tons of sneaker media.
That's so funny. 1984 and the NBA is just like, the league is going black. We can't let the shoes do the same.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
We need more white in these shoes and on the courts, damn it. Oh, Boston, where are you when we need you?
Exactly.
Do you think the NBA is sitting there thinking, why didn't we find him more? All right. Hey, Ezra Wine, thank you, sir.
Thank you guys
what
for
a
having me.
Pleasure.
Great talking
this
to you.
This was fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. This has been Playing with Science. We look forward to your company very, very soon.
Psst. Hey, bud, come here. You could have listened to this episode with no ads. I tell you how. For $5 a month, you can join StarTalk on Patreon and lose all the commercials. Learn more at patreon.com/StarTalkRadio. But you didn't hear it from me.